following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1685. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika sports leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
The Big Ten laughs at the SEC as they continue their claim for the best conference in college football. It's Tuesday, and you're on the line.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Christian Griffin and Tripp Upton.
Yes, welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and that Radio Alabama app. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Another hot one here in the Auburn Opelika area. Feels like you can just copy and paste that on just about every single show. If it's not raining, it's not scheduled to, but it's between 2 and 4 here on ESPN 106.7, so why wouldn't it choose to rain? Just because it simply can. But no, all sunshine here this afternoon, and if that's the biggest complaint, then it's a good problem to have. Welcome in again. Appreciate everybody for being here with us, for spending some time here on the Auburn Opelika sports leader. A lot to dive into here this afternoon. Mock game week for the Auburn Tigers continues in day two. Some media availability that we were able to go watch this team take the field, this team go through some of their early morning stretches, some of their early morning drills, and a lot to highlight from that side of things. We got some PGA Tour postseason changes that we want to be able to highlight here as well. And I'm sure everybody's seen it by now, but the SEC does make a statement in terms of what college football and the NFL both are. And the Big Ten actually takes action from it this morning and continues their argument of, wow, okay, fine, we'll go ahead and run everything. If the SEC wants to simply put words onto a graphic, we'll go ahead and we'll make some changes. We'll declare things that you can and cannot do. And now it's time for the Southeastern Conference to respond. All of that's coming up here in hour number one. Before we dive into our full quarterback rankings here in hour number two, we have a completely randomized order talking about a lot of those guys, and then Tripp and I will rank them here on the show. And so again, appreciate everybody for being here with us. I'm Christian Griffin. As I mentioned, I got across from me, my man Tripp Upton on the controls. I think that's what we're supposed to call it now. My man, happy Tuesday. Again, I know we've both been running around, but if that's the biggest problem to have, seems like a pretty good Tuesday.
Yeah, happy Tuesday. Another day where we run in here at 1:59 and get ready to go, but this time for a good reason. We were talking a lot about just random Auburn and college football, just getting ready for the season to get back, talking about basically trying to be Rain Man and say, okay, yeah, 2014 Vanderbilt game, go. And Christian would talk about it, and you talk about like what memory we have associated with some of these SEC teams. We got to do that for a segment sometime very, 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 very soon, of just like when you look at X team, what is your first memory of them? What is your first opinion on them? And you know, for Christian, there was a lot of games that he was able to pull. Okay, this game back from then. For me, it's a lot of, we lost to them in 2022. We shouldn't have lost to them. Here's what happened in that
game.
Those
are more recent Auburn memories that I
unfortunately
have.
Unfortunately, yeah.
I choose not to try and remember, but you just can't.
Yeah, that's kind of the, again, that's kind of just where I am with when I was at Auburn and being around the program. Mm-hmm. But we had such a good time doing that, where we were like, oh, we have to do a show today where we get to talk more about Auburn and the SEC and the sports world at large.
Yeah, it is. I love doing true, like, guy man cave segments.
Yes.
Where it's essentially just naming players, naming the best players to wear this jersey. Instead, for me, it is just give me a year, give me a team, and either the first memory that comes to mind or the overall memory from that game. Like you think of 2018 Auburn A&M, and it's the blocked punt, the 11 o'clock game where Stidham in the offense weren't doing anything, but the block punt recovered in the end zone right before halftime finally awoke the offense. Moments like that that you remember, and how funny it is that there are obviously the highlighted moments. I know that our guy Brandon Gurgley in there also said 2010 LSU, and how my first memory for that game is not Cam's run at midfield, the Heisman run where Musburger's, did he accelerate? Like, that's not my first memory. Mine is Ontario McCaleb, the jet sweep early in the fourth quarter, right after LSU tied the game, but taking it all the way down the Auburn sideline from right to left, going to where the new Jumbotron is now and getting pushed into the end zone. Like, that's the first memory that comes to mind when I think of that contest. And so it's so fun to be able to dive into, most of the time I should say, it's so fun being able to dive into everything, because you can think of the 18-13 game with LSU, but you can also think of like the Cade York game, which was the hottest football game ever recorded, regardless of whatever the thermometers and the thermostats said. I know Jacob has memories of this, but Jordan-Hare Stadium like ran out of water that game, and so that was kind of the first game where they started allowing you to bring in your own water bottles, and B, they had those giant water
coolers,
like 100-gallon tanks.
Yes,
yeah,
I see.
That's the game that made that happen.
Good for them. Yeah, like
so that's what we've been doing for the last 45 minutes.
Yeah, basically Christian would say a good memory, and then I'd lean in. Yeah, I remember when that's all it has been. And what we need to do is what I need to do with the little free time I have is just do like an Auburn game watch-a-thon and just get you, Jack, Caleb, and the listeners to give me some games I need to go watch and get like a report on.
Ooh.
Just because, like,
just so you can dive
into... I can join in this conversation.
Sure.
So
I'm sure that we can give you some good ones.
Yeah, because I remember Cadillac A&M. I remember the A&M drop. Those are the two. And then Jimbo Fisher on the sideline when it comes with A&M, the three games.
Yeah,
but then
with Eugene Asante choosing to return the ball instead of running over Jimbo Fisher.
Yes, and then you had the then you could talk about the years where it was like, 6 years in a row where the road team would win in Auburn A&M. Like, you beat Money Manziel, but then you'd come home and lose when they joined the SEC.
I remember this isn't what we're diving into all day, but
no.
this was Johnny's initial trip to Auburn, and the Eagle flew behind the small jumbotron at the time, and
just,
you know,
scoreboard.
For pregame, everybody's, you know, whoa, and the Eagle flew behind the scoreboard, and it went silent for like 10 or 15 seconds because nobody knew where the Eagle was, and then it came back, place lost its mind, place was going electric. We were like, okay, that's insane. There's no way we're losing this game. And then Johnny Football.
Yeah.
That's about all that I remember from that game up in the...
Right. But we'll do that. We'll do that eventually.
We definitely will, because we need to do that, at least a segment for every single game that Auburn plays in conference this year. Just a segment that is full on the linebackers. Tell us your favorite memory or your first memory when it comes to LSU, when it comes to Florida, when it comes to A&M, or whatever the case may be, because... that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, you know, Christian, speaking of the linebackers, how can they join in on the show today and be able to join the conversation?
I don't know. You tell me.
Well, the phone lines are open all day today. 334-321.
Actually, probably the hour number one. We don't have enough time management
skills. Oh, yeah, correct. Yes. At hour number one, the phone lines are open. 334-321-1390. Give us a call. We'll put you here on the line. And then the Send Medicine text box is open at 334-784-1OTL. The text box brought to you by Send Medicine. There you get VIP medical care with direct access to your personal physician. With over 20 years of emergency room experience, Dr. Eric Sen is bringing personalized, access-driven healthcare to the Plains. Become a member today by visiting Send Medicine. That's SENNmedicine.com. And that text box phone number, which is open 24/7 at 334-784-1685.
And we start today's program diving into Auburn Mock Game Week. This is something that Alex Golish has continued to implement. Even though you don't have a game this week, you are walking through as if you are. And so Monday mornings, it starts with your recovery. It works your way throughout the week. And the media was able to go to the first three stations here this morning. And a lot to dive into. It started, obviously, with the stretches and getting everybody loose, getting everybody hype with the music blaring over at the Performance Center. And then, Tripp, we got to stay inside for a little bit, or chose to stay inside, to watch the receivers and the running backs. And this is something that I continue to hope will be a big part of Auburn's game plan this season, because when Jeremiah Cobb was not the featured back, it felt like every single time he came in the backfield, it was to make a big play, if not to find the end zone. And a lot of that was with the receiving, with his receptions. Because he's such a good pass catcher, we got to watch a lot of the quarterbacks throwing to the running backs. And that is swing passes. That was a lot of clear out routes, right, where you're the underneath. You start in that running back spot. So you start on the right hip of Byron Brown or Tristan Tia or Reese Brush or whoever the case it was. And you run about a 4-yard kind of diagonal route and then just get horizontal towards the sideline. And that's kind of your one check down if the comeback route doesn't work. But man, the ability of seeing that on like a first and 10, we talked about that, of man, it's a very, very simple play. That's not quite the extension of the run game, but it kind of feels just like it, and how nice that can be. Because man, it's a play that when you see other teams run it all the time, and I'm not talking about the RPO where you have the tight end on the weak side and he fakes the route and all of a sudden the quarterback is basically, I mean, dinosaur arm flicking the football to the tight end, but it's actually a route for the running back. And it feels like you see that, and when it's successful, it's 2nd and 4, 2nd and 3, 2nd and 2. All of a sudden, that makes things that much easier. You then get the ball downhill, pick up a first down, and just like that, that offense that Alex Golish wants to use a whole lot of tempo is able to pick it up, and you don't have to sub. That gets the defense on its heels. That's a perfect either a drive starter or one kind of right in the middle to throw in that little bit of a wrinkle. But I absolutely love seeing things like that. We saw the swing routes where you throw the guy in motion, catches it right at the line of scrimmage, but you make sure, obviously, that it's a forward pass. And then the motion outs as well, where you're trying to work your way 5 wide a little bit. The running back kind of runs from his normal spots in the backfield to kind of a stack formation over on the far side, and it works his way to like a little screen or a little hitch. And so many little different wrinkles that we saw. But, man, if this running back room can be a part of the offense at any capacity, much less if you see routes like that, then it turns into a Byron Brown quarterback power if the box is light. It's a fantastic problem to have. A lot of those plays I would love to see on first downs.
Looking at what Auburn can do with that, I think you took the words right out of my mouth with, not only does it allow you to gain yardage, but it sets up plays down the line where, okay, this formation, they like to motion the guy out and then throw like an orbit screen or just like an out, basically. Okay, we're going to have our safety, we're going to have our linebacker crash when we see that. If you have Chaz Nimrod on that side and the safety comes down and you're able to get by,
turns into that little fake bubble.
The fake bubble, and Chaz Nimrod, go meet the ball at the end zone. That's what it can be. Hey, Singleton, run a comeback because our guy is going to force the linebacker to commit. And what this does as well is, you said open up the box for Byron Brown. So if he's, okay, 5 wide, oh, you're going to send that linebacker out there. It's going to be a 4-on-5 front where I have an extra blocker. Run it.
Mm-hmm. Makes it to where, I mean, it's you allow the right guard or the right tackle or whoever the case may be, you're not blocking anybody on the front lines. You're getting into that second level.
You're taking out that mic and basically, hey, safety, tackle our 6'3 quarterback.
Yeah. Here's Byron Brown, who, in case you didn't know, is very afraid of contact. He doesn't want to lower his shoulder, especially if you meet him anywhere near the goal line. He's somebody that, man, he really likes to avoid that contact, I say very much sarcastically. But we're able to look at that, or was able to look at that, early on in the scrimmage, or in the media availability. I mean, I think that is a fantastic sign, getting the running backs into the offense from horizontal and vertical passing game.
Yeah, I think the passing game is where they're going to shine effectively, because it's going to force a difference in what the coverage looks like. You're not going to be able to put a linebacker on him.
Yeah.
Because he's going to be dropping back and pass. If he's running out, like running like a Texas route or even motioning out, you can't send a linebacker out there because it's going to slow down. And if you get a switch, they're going to put a fast wide receiver on a linebacker. It's going to be easy. However, It's also going to hurt because then if you commit a linebacker to watching Byron Brown to playing a zone kind of coverage over the middle like a hook, hey, you're gonna force a safety or a corner that is not good open field tackling compared to a linebacker on a guy that is willing to run around them, through them, over them, whatever it takes. And Omar Mabson, Jeremiah Cobb, saw a little bit of this with Nekai Davenport.
Yeah, and Nekai Davenport was back with the running backs here today, which is a very, very good sign.
Yes, and seeing those four guys kind of run these reps where they're able to get downhill, it's going to force defensive coordinators to make a decision.
Yeah.
And the more decisions that you can force from a Mike linebacker or a defensive coordinator, the easier it's going to be for this offense. And that's exactly what Alex Golden wants to do, make them think instead of just react, see ball, get ball.
Yeah, I mean, you just paint the portrait of Byron Brown and, I mean, call it Jeremiah Cobb, standing at midfield right in between the hashes. You have Keyshawn Singleton, your lone receiver, out. I mean, kind of in between the numbers and the hashes, but he runs that comeback route. You have Jeremiah Cobb running the, again, not quite the swing, but just kind of the get horizontal route 2 or 3 yards beyond the line of scrimmage, while you have Byron Brown rolling out to his right. If you're playing zone, you're making that outside corner either take Singleton, who's now going to be 12 to 15 yards downfield, or step up, take Jeremiah Cobb. That makes one of those decisions open. Or you then have, if you're playing man, cornerback's going to take Singleton. You're forcing the linebacker to go meet Jeremiah Cobb way outside by the numbers. And if it's not open, Byron Brown's already outside the pocket.
Right.
And all of a sudden, he now has a full head of steam going downhill.
Yeah, and that brings up another thing I want to talk about from practice today was the work that we saw with this receiver room, with Byron Brown, Tristan Tia, the rest of the quarterback room on the off platform, the mobile throws.
Yeah.
Really impressed me today.
Yeah, you're seeing saw a couple of the deep play shots as well, but it wasn't just the stand in the pocket for 5 seconds, let the receiver run a little 8 yard hitch and go, and then just chuck it up as far as you can. It was a little bit of the, okay, we're going to roll out to our right, plant, throw it back across your body to the left, and watching Byron Brown throw 55-yard balls right to the front of the end zone, and then you watch Tristan Tia, you watch Reese Brush do it, who probably can compete for the best arm on the team between those two guys.
Yeah.
I mean, Tia, his one problem was overthrowing the receivers from 55 yards, and again, take that with what
you will. Imagine having that problem where
right.
I think we've seen in the past, I mean, you could argue since Bo Nix, but even then you could have a conversation where we've had an underthrow problem.
Even then, I mean, Stidham was the last guy that you trusted to truly drop back in the pocket.
Right, but instead of it being a underthrow where the defensive back traditionally can make a play,
mm-hmm.
like if you're given the choice between overthrowing it out of bounds and worst case scenario a safety makes an incredible play on it, or underthrowing it into the back of a receiver or a defender.
Well, it's whether the receiver is having to then go play DB.
Yes, that's what we've seen with Jackson Arnold, Peyton Thorne, Robbie Ashford, T.J. Finley, Hank Brown, Bo Nix even have it. We were talking about the Tyler Fromm touchdown, and you said it's your belief that he wasn't trying to throw it to Tyler Fromm.
Story for another time, but yes.
Yes,
I'm just saying that kind of problem
has been over Auburn, and that's what led to a lot of the Bo Picks turnovers mm-hmm. where he underthrew the ball. And I like it that okay, Tristan Tia, they have the arm strength but also the arm confidence to
yeah. –
Oh, you're on a deep post? Go get it. Oh, you're running a go route? I'm going to throw it to the pylon, meet the ball there. Seeing that, not only in the pocket, but also on the run, that's pretty good, especially in the designed rollout plays.
Yeah, I'll say that Byron Brown, the timing in the intermediate game looked really good as well. Again, obviously, this is reps against air. This isn't with defensive linemen charging at you.
No.
This isn't with the offensive line having to protect, and this is not having to decipher zone and man. Yet that being said, we saw it early on kind of in the summer of just the timing patterns still not being where they needed to be. Thought everything looked really good. It's coming off the breaks. It's before you get to that second window where then it's late and you have that other outside backer. You have the other guy that's able to break off of his man, come and intercept the ball, just cut off in front of one of the receivers. Everything looked very crisp this morning between the receivers and the quarterbacks, which, again, take that with what you will, yet it's very nice to be able to say, yeah, the timing looked good, rather than, oh, man.
Right. And I think that it also matters so much on that timing is because this offense to me is such a timing-based offense. It's such a leverage-based offense where you're having guys outside, and if you're able to get inside leverage, you're going to have a window because those linebackers can't play past the hash marks, past the numbers to play defense and play that kind of inside zone. If you're running it to the outside, the corners can't fully commit inside because then you could run a comeback, where you're able to get leverage. That's why timing matters so much, because if a wide receiver gets that leverage, you have to take advantage of it.
Maybe we'll look a little bit at the offensive line as well. And just from what we saw, it looked like it was Joe Simmons, Strand, Best, Skinner, and Ramil. Again, this was kind of interchangeable, but those were the five guys that at least it looked like in terms of the offensive line. Got to look a little bit at the punt coverage, the punt unit. Hudson Cock, obviously, friend of the show, going to be doing a lot of the fourth down duties, and looked as if he's gotten more confidence building with that, the leg as well, whether that's the rugby style or staying in the staying behind the little swing door or whatever. And Christian Neptune appeared to be the guy taking a lot of the punt returns. And again, take this with what you will, he actually did have guys running at him and seemed very, very comfortable returning punts.
Yeah, that's something Auburn needed to work on for years. And I like that the special teams, it isn't just, okay, punters and kickers, you guys go in the indoor practice facility and just y'all figure it out.
Yeah, they're working on full on, hey, get to the punter.
Here's how we're going to drop back in punt coverage. Here's how we're going to attack a punt returner in space. And that matters so much because that's what you're going to see. You're not kicking in an indoor facility with no one around you. It's being put as a focal point where it's the second or third period of practice that they're working on special teams.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Being able to see McPherson continue to, I can't even say hit field, I mean, absolutely drill field goals to where the indoor football facility needs to make goalposts that are taller, because McPherson from the 35 and 40 yard line is drilling the top of the back of the net to where it would look like one of those MLB home runs if it were to go over the right pylon of, or the right upright of, okay, we got to go review it because you wouldn't be able to tell if it actually went over or not. But it's a fantastic problem.
Another guy in the kicking room, I know we got to get to break here in a moment, but Connor Gibbs looked really good today. Looking at watching him take field goals, like I thought it was McPherson at first just because it was like 30, 40 yards. But it was clear, almost clearing the net behind the goalpost. He had a phenomenal one, and that gives me a lot of confidence where, yes, Alex does have the clutch factor, does have the in-game experience, but if they have to turn to Connor Gibbs because of whatever reason, especially given some of the other things going on around the program and stuff like that, you're happy to have him. You're happy. You have confidence in him.
Yeah, it seems like camp is beginning to turn its focus towards game preparation, and I think that's a fantastic problem to have for this team. You're continuing to see a little bit of the depth chart work its way into fruition as well, and we do have to get to break, but when we come back, do want to dive into a little bit of that. We have some of the defensive line communications in there as well, and some more news on the receiver front that we want to dive into here before we dive into the statement that the SEC made yesterday and the Big Ten putting those words into action in terms of what the NFL and the college football game is supposed to look like. We're just off and running here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. If you want to be a part of today's show, highly recommend you to do so. Want your thoughts? Feel free to get those out on the phone lines at 334-321-1390 or in the Send Medicine text box as well at 334-784-1685. We're back after this on ESPN 106.7.
You're on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton. Be a part of the show by calling 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1685.
Back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Continuing this conversation of day two mock game week for the Auburn Tigers. And we talked a lot about the wide receiver units and how good they looked with the quarterbacks here this afternoon. A couple of names that we did not see. Bryce Kane, you feel as if he continues to work on that cornerback position. I don't believe we've gotten word if that is permanent or not, but based off of what we saw today, I would imagine that it's kind of tending its way to be so. And we also got word that Eric Smith, the freshman from Salem, is no longer with the team. This is not anything disciplinary, although his brother Duke was dismissed for disciplinary actions in June. Eric Smith had not been with the team for the past couple of weeks in terms of fall camp, and so we were informed today that from Nathan King, actually, that Eric Smith is no longer with the program. And so maybe that clears things up even more about the Trey Taylor situation, which we did see a little bit of today. And you talk about a guy that is just not somebody that you want to try and either A, catch up to, or B, tackle in space. If you do tackle him in space, I think it would hurt him more than it would hurt anybody else. But this is a guy that is very, very crucial, very critical to what this team either wants to put on the field for the defense, or if you see him in game action, I don't see anything truly wrong as we continue to wait for what that true eligibility is going to look like. And although his situation is a little bit different from some of these situations in semi-professional football, how about that perfect segue into the SEC's statement and the Big Ten's statement. Sorry, the SEC's statement, putting words on paper, putting words on a graphic to post on social media saying, this is bad, you shouldn't do it, give me your wrist, ouch, don't do that again. Then the Big Ten walks in here and says, you know what, that's cute. Let's make actions out of it.
Good for the Big Ten. We'll talk all more about it here in a moment, but just great stuff by the Big Ten, okay by the SEC, maybe not enough, and LSU continuing to be just terrible.
Hey, the SEC did it first, so take that, Big
Ten. Hang the banner. It just means more, Christian.
It just means first, because you shouldn't do it. We'll dive into what the SEC released as well as what the Big Ten stated this morning in terms of college players going to the pros and then coming back and then going again and then coming back and then going again and then who really knows what that gray area looks like.
You're on the line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
Minutes into the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate everybody for being here with us and would love anybody's thoughts on anything we're diving into or anything that's on your mind here this afternoon. Feel free, give us a call 334-321-1390 or shoot us a text. The Send Medicine text box always open at 334-784-1685. Again, 334-784-1OTL. And we flip our focus to stay in the college sports world, kind of, but also outside just the Auburn world, look at the SEC and then look at college football as a whole. On Monday evening, the SEC presidents and chancellors held a video conference before releasing a following statement, in which I will read here in just a few moments. But a lot of this is discussing, obviously, right for the Cincinnati Bengals, Daquan Wright, who hoped to clear the waivers so he could return to LSU. And we know that he was committed. We also know that there was a defensive lineman that was committed, that is committed to the LSU Tigers, as well as RJ Lewis, also for LSU, but not Lane Kiffin, but just Will Wade. So the LSU athletic department is making a whole lot of friends right now in terms of everything that they are doing. I believe LSU is up to like 5 basketball players right now, but RJ Lewis received a temporary injunction to play for LSU this season from a Louisiana judge on Monday, despite signing contracts both with the Jazz and with the Celtics. And so, continue to make college sports even better.
The state of Louisiana, like, not only just the university, like, think about when the governor was getting involved with, like, the basketball and football searches.
Yeah.
Look at what the judges are doing, just signing injunctions in blue and, or purple and gold ink. That's just absurd. And I just don't know what they're doing, and other than just, we need the Tigers to be good.
Yeah. The SEC was the first to release any sort of statement. And so
Number one, baby.
Take your wins when you can get them, I guess. The statement, in which I'm sure a lot of you have seen by now, says, quote, college athletes, not former professional athletes, have been at the heart of the Southeastern Conference. Individuals who choose to leave college athletics, sign professional playing contracts, and compete professionally should not then be permitted to return to college competition. Let me repeat that again. Individuals who choose to leave college athletics, sign professional playing contracts, and compete professionally should not then be permitted to return to college competition. Allowing that to occur will blur the line between college and professional sports, create significant competitive equity concerns, and reduce the opportunities for high school and current college athletes. College sports are for college athletes. The current confusion around national eligibility standards emphasizes the need to advance the Protect College Sports Act. And so last night when this was released, you felt as if it was about, well, maybe for the first 30 minutes, it was like, okay, wow, look, a statement now has been made. And then you read the statements and you kind of waited for there to be a follow-up, the next step of the ladder, working your way towards it. No, there wasn't anything from the SEC. It was simply, you know what, pro athletes, they shouldn't return to college competition. I think that that's bad. And everybody kind of sat there and was like, okay. It's the classic meme of like, the kid holding the stick, poking the rock, saying, do something.
Do something.
That's about where everybody sat for the SEC, and it was like, okay, cool, great statement. Do something about it. And we waited. We waited all night, and there was no statement. And then we woke up. And a conference did decide to make a statement. Yet it wasn't the ones that initially made the opening statement by putting pen to paper, or in today's world, typing onto a graphic with the SEC logo and saying, you know what? These athletes shouldn't be able to return to competition. Got to give credit where it's due. The Big Ten woke up this morning and said, you know what? That's cute. Hold my beer and watch this. We're going to make an official statement. College players will not return, or former college players now in the NFL, they will not return to the Big Ten. We are mandating it to where it won't be allowed. And now the SEC almost has their hands tied behind their back, and everybody waits for the Southeastern Conference to make whatever decision they choose or do not choose, because now you're at the point of, is a school or an individual going to be greater than your conference as a whole?
It is, you know, you shouldn't, is the, what makes me, what I want to circle in the SEC, because are you right? Sure. But what are you going to do about it? I shouldn't speed on my way home from work, but I do occasionally.
I shouldn't eat this other unnamed chicken and waffle sandwich, which I've had way too many of, because it's my favorite food in the entire world. I shouldn't. But what are you going to do?
I shouldn't eat my dessert before my dinner. I shouldn't eat when I go to a restaurant or something, like a buffet-style restaurant or something, and I get two little cookies with my meal.
Yeah. That would be like your parents telling you that. Yeah. No, you shouldn't do it.
You shouldn't do it. But if I eat it, what are you going to do? Pump my stomach? No. What the Big Ten saying, you won't do that, and here's why. And it makes it so backwards because, at least in the Big Ten, there aren't any schools looking to do this. You don't have a single player on an NFL roster that is committed to a Big Ten school.
The only one was Ryan Day yesterday saying, we don't want to do this, but if the other schools that are going to compete for legitimate national championships are also looking into this, we have to at least basically entertain
the
opportunity or entertain the idea. But there was no further comment than that. And even Dan Lanning, which we talked about yesterday, further up and made that comment of, no, it shouldn't be allowed. If you choose to do this, you have to lay in the bed that you made. You have to lay with the decisions that you decided to make when you thought it was better for you. But because there's now an opportunity that may be better, may be worse, but you think that grass may be greener, no, that should not be allowed. That's what the Big Ten is saying, while the SEC continues to say, you know what? You shouldn't do it, and then you're allowing the coach that is doing it to go on to national media and continue to make sites, continue to make comments of, yeah, but you can't pick and choose which system you want to abide by because you like this one or you dislike this one.
Yeah, but he can pick and choose what team he wants to coach. He can pick and choose what – I'm not going to get on my Lane Kiffin tirade today, but It just, I'm very curious that maybe the SEC couldn't do a statement like this because of the fact that it is a member institution in LSU, and depending on what the bylaws say, if they have some kind of veto power or they have to have a unanimous vote, and LSU obviously is going to vote no, would also make me wonder if they, if it isn't a unanimous vote, it's like a simple majority or a three-fourths vote.
Yeah.
Are there other schools that are voting to keep this system, but we just haven't heard about them yet, that are having conversations with people?
Right. Well, we now know that one of the two power conferences is fully in disagreement and says that this won't happen. There's also word that the ACC commissioner, Jim Phillips, told ESPN on Tuesday that their conference, the ACC, plans on making a statement either today or sometime later on this week. And so if that's the case, that will be half of the P4 teams that are trying to decipher what to go against or what not to go against. But how wild is it that, again, we talk about what college football is versus what college football was, and I don't want to dive into that side of things that I kind of hit on yesterday in terms of how it shows why, although college football is fantastic, of turns a lot of people off from this offseason, but looking at what this is possibly becoming, the fact that we are reading statements of Big Ten won't allow players to return to college from the NFL. Imagine somebody that hasn't watched college football in 15 years. Read that statement to them and then try and explain everything that's going on in the college football landscape. This is going to be in 10 years or whatever the case may be, whenever there is somebody, if that's Netflix or if that's ESPN, that wants to make a giant documentary on NIL, transfer portal, 5 for 5, and now this, it's going to be like when you're in elementary school or middle school and you're flipping through the history books of like, holy cow, I can't believe that this happened in 1974, whatever the case
imagine
may be.
Imagine living through that.
Right.
We're doing that right now.
It's exactly what you're dealing with. That, again, in 10 or 15 years, kids that are born are not going to know what the NCAA is because of moments like this.
I mean, look at what, like, Jim Tressel getting fired for a free tattoo scandal. Look at Todd Gurley getting money to sign autographs, a business payment, and they just canned him money. Here you go. And he gets suspended games.
Or now you have Arian Carter for Tennessee, who
was suspended
two
home.
Games for a $427 flight home, which they somehow tracked.
Which he is now down to one game.
But it's like, this is what we're putting way too much stock and focus in. And I know that's always been the joke of like, oh, nice job. You continue to look at the stuff that just doesn't truly matter. But when you're looking at situations like this, fact that the NCAA has no power whatsoever, that they're forcing the teams and the conferences within the NCAA to make the statements for them, that is what is embarrassing on my end. It's basically like you're scared to make the statement. And so, hey, little brother, go ask if you can have the sleepover or whatever the case may be, because you're too scared to make that. That's essentially what the NCAA is at, because there's absolutely no power within that organization.
I just think that this whole situation comes apart from two things and that I think are just wrong with modern culture in general. And one is greed. One is the fact that we're going to get so much money for having these players. I'm going to make so much more money than being on an NFL practice squad by being a backup in college football, which is just a crazy statement in itself. You know, I want to get playing time, so I'm going to go to 4 different institutions in 4 years and I'm going to sue for a 5th year. That's one.
Or 6th.
Or 7th.
Or 7th.
Yeah, that is
what is eligibility?
Seriously, that is one of the problems in today's society. It's a societal problem, and it is specifically evident in college athletics. And another is a lack of consequences. I just think that there is such a that people do not have to live with consequences anymore. And this is in college football, this is 100% true. You can go to the NFL and break an established rule of trying to come back to college and think that you're the victim. You can bet on college football games and bet on your team. You bet on them, you get punished, you get removed from college athletics, and you still cry about the consequences. People don't want to face consequences nowadays. And especially in college athletics, Christian, there are none, because the NCAA won't do anything that is allowing this to happen.
And now you're at the points. If you're the SEC, do you wait for another conference to respond? Do you try and go make a secondary statement to either one up or to agree with the Big Ten, which you know secretly the SEC does not want to do? The last thing the Southeastern Conference wants to do is to go, you know what? The Big Ten was right. We now agree with every statement that they made or whatever the case may be, because it wasn't the SEC's decision, it wasn't their power, and it puts the Big Ten back in charge of that power trip that both conferences are fighting for. But now there's even more pressure on the SEC to respond back and possibly hurt the teams in their league that reside in the SEC, that wear the SEC on their patch, that has the SEC logo for now on their college football fields. The SEC has to decide if college football is better or if the individual teams and if the individuals are better. Who has more power? It's now time for the NCAA to answer that statement.
And it's a great,
answer that question.
And it's a great point of like, if I mean, I don't want to say this to be demeaning to this team or these programs, but I tell me if you disagree. If this was Mississippi State, or if this was Vanderbilt, if this was South Carolina, heck, potentially if this was Auburn, they'd ban this. They would have already said, yeah, we're not going to let that happen. Does the brand of LSU and Lane Kiffin and what the LSU Tigers can be with this roster?
Yeah, representing the SEC.
Representing the SEC. Does that give them a lot bigger of a pass? If a Georgia or a Texas or an Alabama did this, would they get the same treatment as if Vanderbilt, if Mississippi State, if Kentucky did this?
Not at all.
They would have already banned it.
That's why we've talked so much about the rules that need to be put in place and the fighting for change in terms of what those rules and regulations and everything look like. That's why we've talked about personally on the show of, and we've talked with Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7 about this plenty of times as well, of you feel as if Kirby Smart is kind of the spokesperson of the SEC when it comes to representing those coaches. Whether he wants to or not, you look at the success, you look at this Georgia team and what they do, and then Kirby's obviously not afraid to shy away from any sort of criticism or any sort of questions when he's talked about, yeah, we're going to break away from the NCAA. We have the power to. If somebody that had less power were to say something like that, it would be laughed at. It would be joked. You'd stand on your pedestal and point your finger at him and laugh. Well, because it's somebody like Kirby Smart, because it's somebody like Ryan Day, because it's somebody like Dan Lanning, because it's somebody like Dabo Swinney. You need brands like that. You need names like that to come in and fight for that change. And that's on the positive side of things. Answering your question, yes, the LSU brands and Lane Kiffin have wrongfully impacted the feelings that go on behind the scenes of all of these rulings. The brand of LSU, the brand of Lane Kiffin, the drama, the publicity that it brings to the Southeastern Conference, and the potential success that LSU has on the football field as well as on the basketball court in 2026 and 2027. The SEC is delaying everything because of that.
It makes you look like, I don't know if you know who, how much Greek philosophy you care about. Diogenes, do you know who that is?
Yes, I know a lot about Diogenes, but for those that don't, please feel
basically,
the
he was like the philosopher that would yell from the hill and everyone thought he was crazy and ended up, they thought about it and was like, wow, this actually was right. Like the Socrates of the world that like would yell and yell. People at the time would thought they were wrong. And then as you kept going, that's what Dabo Swinney is, guys. Dabo was right all along when he said, what you guys are doing is ruining college football. And at the time we said, Dabo, you just don't like change. You just are being a stick in the mud. You're being weird. If you could push a button, would you let Dabo Swinney be the commissioner of college football and input note, you know,
maybe not even that, but you'd let his words,
his worldview of like the limited to no transfer portal, limited transfer portal, no NIL or limited NIL, which I don't know if you could have a limited NIL. I think you just have to ban it. And having stuff like what's gone on this summer happen, Dabo Swinney was right. And that's crazy to say.
It's wild to think that where we were just a couple of years ago in terms of NIL now being a possibility, and now it's worked its way into fruition to not just going to your local auto shop and signing autographs from 2 to 4, and anybody that goes in there can get a 15% family discount or whatever the case may be. You're now simply at the point of paying for play, competitive advantage, even if that means going and getting former NFL players that got cut from their NFL preseason teams to work their way back to college football to give you a competitive advantage. That is where we are at in terms of college football. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we will hit on something else before we wrap up hour number one. Get into hour number two, where it's quarterback ranking time. We rank 1 through 16, all of that coming up in hour number two, but we'll come back and wrap up hour number one right after this.
You are on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
All right, wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7, the Tuesday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Getting fired up here on this Tuesday afternoon in the studio, diving into the SEC's statement on college player or NFL players should not return to the college game. And then the Big Ten saying, okay, that's cool, watch this. And going and making the official statement. And Tripp, you were reading something out during the break that says not only was this agreed upon by the Big Ten, this was unanimous.
Yes, it was a unanimous vote banning NFL players has officially passed with a unanimous faculty rep approval. This is from Pete Thamel.
And again, this is Big Ten only as of now,
yes,
right?
Here's the specific language of what's not allowed. Underclassmen who declared for the NFL draft did not withdraw. So if you thought, If I'm still taking classes while I'm going through the draft process and then come back the next year for my senior year, I can do that. Nope. If you declare for the draft, you can't. Any football player who signed a contract with any pro sports league, that probably means that you're not going to see baseball players that go to play baseball then come back to college athletics or play a different sport. You're not going to see that either. That's fine. Necessary loss. Be very curious to see what this does for basketball, but that's a whole other point. Anyone who was officially on a professional roster.
Anyone.
That includes people on UFL, CFL, AFL, Arena Football League, and specifically the NFL. And Christian, I think that's cut and dry exactly what needs to be affecting the NCAA, because I'm just shocked that it's that simple.
This was unanimously agreed upon in the Big Ten to not allow it, to basically say, you know what, all this drama that's going on in college sports and in certain conferences, good thing it's not happening here. You know how little, and I understand that this is not necessarily direct because we live in the world of the SEC, but you know how little drama there's been up there? Just as frustrating as that is, the SEC, there is drama every single day. And I know that that's not direct because, obviously, again, we don't live in Wisconsin or Ohio where you're in that world,
right?
Yet
I mean, it's the SEC soapbox, the daytime opera, you know. And there are stuff that goes on at Big Ten schools. There's a lot of it. There's a lot of bad stuff that's happened
Sure.
there in history, but at least when it comes to this kind of, again, the soap opera, it's in the Southeastern Conference. Again, Christian, it just means more.
And why leave the SEC when you can stay in about it and keep talking about it? And that is what we will do. Our official 2026 quarterback rankings, as the final one, the final battle, was named earlier this morning. We can now dive into it and give our full pick 16 through 1, and we'll do that coming up here in hour number 2.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1685. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
An average team takes the field in the SEC. Which quarterback are you taking to lead your team down the field? Our quarterback rankings in the SEC.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Christian Griffin and Trip Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us, whether it's been the entire hour, whether it's been off and on, or whether you're just now picking up with us, man. We appreciate you for spending some time here on this hot summer afternoon. And having a really fun time in the studio. Was not necessarily planning on diving into more of just how conversational and how fired up we got about everything. But you never know what you're going to get here. That's why you tune in on ESPN 106.7. A lot of it was in hour number one. We talked Auburn-Mott game week. This is day two. We talked a lot about what we saw in our media availabilities this morning, whether that was punt coverage, punt returns, punts just in general, working on inside the 20, the left and the right boundary, also just about as hard and as far as you can kick them, as well as the return game. We talked about the quarterbacks. We talked about the running backs, the receivers in there as well, and a little bit about that offensive line as those pieces are beginning to work their way closer and closer to names that you feel very confident in, the guys that are going to be starting on September 5th come Auburn and Baylor inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium. We talked a lot about the SEC statements that they made in terms of pro players shouldn't play in college anymore. And it's like, wow, nicely done. I'm glad that we all agree on something. Do something about it. And how we waited all last night for there to be something that was more than just a statement. And there never really was anything until we woke up and the Big Ten decided, you know what, we'll make our official statement as they unanimously agree on banning any sort of guys that or girls that have professional contracts at the next level, banning them from coming back and playing anything in terms of college football, college baseball, college basketball, at least in the Big Ten Conference. And so now it's time for the SEC to essentially make their next step and the next chess piece. While you know that they don't want to sit there and just agree with the Big Ten, there has to be something on their end. And so now we wait to see what the SEC decides. The ACC also said that they will come out with a statement either later on today or at some point later on in the week. And so now it's just a big time waiting game to see who values what more, if it's the SEC and they value the individual and the individual team, or if they value what college football and any sort of rules that they stand on are. So all of that was in hour number one. If you missed any of it, you can always go back and check it out at our podcast center over at ESPNAU.com.
And in hour number two, we give you the 2026 official on-the-line quarterback rankings.
Yeah, one of them is right, one of them is not so right. We'll let you decide which one.
Yeah, we'll let you decide. And
it's mine, but
I don't know, Jim. I don't know. We'll do that. We'll talk a little bit. I know you want to talk about the PGA new championship format.
Yeah.
I'll let you talk about that because I think you understood it a little bit better than I did. But, you know, that's maybe I think you understand golf a little bit better than I do right now. But
our shirts wouldn't say that.
Our shirts wouldn't say that, no. But, I mean, it is what it is. But if you want to be a part of the show, phone lines are going to be closed just because we need to stay on time and we want to be able to bring this to you. So that's more of an us precaution than y'all. But the text box is always open. Give us your thoughts. 334-784-1685. The Sin Medicine text box, and it's brought to you by Sin Medicine. There you get VIP medical care with direct access to your personal physician. With over 20 years of emergency room experience, guys, Dr. Eric Sin brings personalized, access-driven health care to you. Become a member today by visiting Sin Medicine. That's SENNmedicine.com and get started today.
Yeah, again, whether you're in the college life, pre-college, whether you're in the early adult stages, or you're a half happily in the workforce or happily retired. Again, any step of the way, he's the guy you need to go to. He'll take care of you the same way that he takes care of us. Appreciate President Eric and all that he does for On the Line, as well as all of our high school coverage on the Lee Scott Sports Network as well. And while we have just a minute or two, because we probably are going to take a little bit of an early break, so that way we can spend a lot of hour number two diving into our 2026 quarterback rankings, do want to dive into a little bit for the golf fanatics out there. I know that if Mr. Ben Taylor's listening, he'd be able to tell you all about it.
I know. We should have called him in and basically just said, like no context. Like, don't tell him we're doing it.
Just hey, straight hot mic him.
Yes, hot mic him. Explain to me.
I don't know.
I know. With him, I don't know. Explain this to me like I'm five. Basically, what this is. But, I mean, it looks like a bracket-style March Madness to determine a true champion.
Yeah, and that's essentially what it is. And so the PGA Tour's future postseason will include a championship series finale, which will be a 72-hole stroke play tournament that will finalize the points list and determine the season-long champion, followed by the top golfers competing in a match play over 2 weeks in the reimagined Tour Championship. This was all announced on a news conference earlier today at the Tour Championship in East Lake Golf Club in Atlanta. Which, have you been? I still haven't been.
I have not. No, I got a ton of buddies heading up there this weekend, but unfortunately, I had to move kind of a little bit higher on the priority list and go into East Lake. But I've heard it's phenomenal.
Okay, well, I need to make my way out there. Yeah,
we'll
you would think that I
we will do it.
You'd think that I would eventually, but again, so this new postseason will make its debut following the 2028 season, and this again is an article from ESPN and Mark Schlobert. This was from 8:45 this morning, and so says the new postseason again will make its debut following the 2028 regular season. Says, quote, "I think one of the issues with the current Tour Championship was that I don't think anyone really felt as if it was culminating in crowning the best golfer in the world, because how we know of it right now in the championship, you're basically given strokes, and you give Scottie Scheffler, who's going to be number one in the rankings, you give him strokes on the green. I think Rory McIlroy said it best, everybody else is effed." That was the word that he chose to use in terms of what this could mean, or what this means. Basically, right now, if you give the world number one basically the most shots to work with and do so on the putting greens, which, funny enough, is where Scotty struggles the most. And so you're basically giving him the most benefits where he struggles the most, and you're expecting anybody else to try and beat world number one, who played last weekend with, hand, mouth, and foot or something like that, but still refused to withdraw and still shot pretty well. Wild to think about that. But says, quote, "I feel like calling it to the playoffs was almost doing it a disservice, because it was just a separate competition. I think we've established how you determine the best golfer in the world, and then we've selected a really great competition in a format that fans want to see." I can agree with that. "And it's just a different set of skills over a different period of time." And so the series finale will include the top 90 players from the season-long's points list, all who will retain their card the following season. The final points list after that will determine the season-long champion, and obviously all of the bonus distributions as well. And so there could potentially be, again, two champions crowned that week. If Scottie Scheffler finished third in the Tour Championship Series but still had the most points, that obviously shows the crowning of two different champions, but a revised point system could lead to more volatility in the final event. So the top 32 golfers on the season-long points list at the conclusion of the championship series finale will advance to the Tour Championship, which will be played over 2 weeks at different courses. There will be three rounds of group stage competition with 32 golfers competing in eight groups of four. So you think about that almost in terms of like a regional in college baseball, where everybody goes to these certain sites, and these are the guys that you are competing against. Rather than one playing two, number one is hosting essentially these other three golfers, and you're playing against those types of guys. Golfers will be seeded, and they'll compete against the other three golfers in that group. The top two will then advance to the second week of the Tour Championship. If golfers are tied at the end of group play, a playoff will be used to determine which golfers advance to the next stage. You talk about an awesome, like, hole to three holes of golf. It's basically this one putt determines if you make it to weekend two or not. That's absolutely incredible in terms of, like, the fan drama and the drama at the actual golf course. After that, the 16 golfers who make it to the second week will compete in a first-of-its-kind match play bracket to determine the Tour Championship winner. Players will advance through the bracket based on their win-loss record, and the final two undefeated golfers will compete to be crowned the Tour Champion. And so I think that is going to be a whole lot of fun. It makes it a little bit more, again, it shows the actual best golfer, and understand that like seeding plays a little bit of a factor as well, and how you can still be crowned like the regular season champion, which is still going to be that comes with the most amount of like money from the regular season. But I think having a style of format like this almost fits, and I don't even want to say this as like a backhanded compliment, but it almost fits a little bit more of like the social media golf that we have seen, just in terms of that entertainment aspect of it's mano-a-mano, me versus you, let's go play 18 holes and let's figure out a winner. Between that and like a little bit of like a Ryder Cup style, I think this is going to be a whole lot of fun. You talk about the engagement, you talk about the attention that it's going to bring as well. I think this is going to be absolutely awesome watching, basically, again, an individual Ryder Cup type of format of it's mano-a-mano, it's me versus you, let's go, winner moves on, and we're going to do the exact same thing tomorrow.
I mean, you look at what like rivalries there are in golf. There's Brooks and Bryson from back in the day. I mean, I guess now Rory and Bryson has kind of become a rivalry of two, you know, they don't play on the same tour right now, but opposing ideals in these majors that comes to golf. Imagine what kind of rivalries and juice could be created when it's like, you're the last two, the 3 years in a row, Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy. Mm-hmm. It is UVU. I guarantee you that would give box office buzz of like, you know, tomorrow, Scheffler, McIlroy 3. Like, yeah. It turned into boxing.
It turned into like a WWE event. And it's so cool, too, because they also talk about it, because it's not just like a one-and-done format. This is not a March Madness type of field. Again, it's the regionals where you can still lose. You just have to finish top two. So even if you lose the first match, you're still able to go out. And if you can beat the other two, then you're still fine.
It's like the World Cup knockout stage.
Exactly. Yes, the exact same thing. All you're trying to do, obviously you're trying to win it, but you're trying to get to the point of where you're able to move on to the next round. I think this is really, really cool. It sucks that it has to wait now until, again, the conclusion of 2028, the regular season. So a couple of years, but I think this is a really, really cool idea to not only crown the regular season champion, but to be able to crown almost a bracket-style champion of the entire PGA, the Championship Tour Series. And so I think that's really, really cool, and I think that that's worth noting here this afternoon. But we will take a bit of an early break, because when we come back, we are diving into our full quarterback list, 1 through 16. We have these quarterbacks randomized, and so we're going to be able to go, rather than us both talking 16 to 1 and having so many different names, we're going to throw out a quarterback, we're both going to talk about him, and then we're going to rank him. And then at the end, we'll be able to dive into what our overall list will look like. We're just underway here in hour number 2 here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You're on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton. Be a part of the show by calling 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1685.
It's officially time for, I guess not the first, but one of the very first ones that we've done in terms of our rankings for the 2026 season. And again, if you want to be a part of this, we highly recommend you to do so. If you have a list on your end that you would like to compare, feel free, send that our way with the Send Medicine text box at 334-784-1685, 334-784-1OTL. But it is officially time to give our On the Line 1 through 16 quarterback rankings for the SEC, and a little bit of a different style than I think what we've done in the past. I think this will make it a little bit easier for the radio to follow, because as much as this is a true ranking system, it's also just giving overall knowledge about those quarterbacks as well. And so rather than us both sitting at 16 and then both sitting at 15 and having so many different names and trying to go back and look at so many different guys, figured we'd go randomized quarterbacks and then we'd be able to rank them and then we'll keep you updated on that. And then once we reach the end of the show, we'll be able to look at 1 through 16. And I feel like that is the best way to knock things out. If you're in agreement to that, I think that's the easiest way for us to be able to dive into each of those quarterbacks and then put them onto our ranking system. Again, he is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. And Kamario Taylor is the first
starting
guy
out with a hard one
that starts everything off here for us. The Mississippi State quarterback making his way into the first true starting quarterback year. Again, started a couple of games for the Bulldogs last year, started the Ole Miss game, started the bowl game, and a guy that I know that we are both very, very high on. You look at what he did, completed 56% of his passes last year, 629 passing yards, 5 touchdowns, 1 interception, also had 458 rushing yards and 8 rushing touchdowns as well. And so you know the dual threat ability, you know the potential. 1 through 16, before we go about this, we talked about the different routes that we wanted to take with this, and this is kind of the, rather than looking at system, rather than looking at the receivers around, things like that, just much more of, and obviously that plays a little bit of a factor, but it's the expectations for the year 2026, as well as if you led the most average SEC offense onto the field in terms of receivers, offensive line, as well as running backs, who would you want leading your group? So Kamario Taylor, the quarterback from Mississippi State, leads things off. Where does he rank on your list?
I have him at 8th, and I think that's maybe a little high, but here's what I like about him. He's a great athlete. He is arguably, I think, in my opinion, the best running quarterback in the NFL in terms of a pure rusher. I mean, you looked at it.
In the SEC?
In the SEC.
Okay, you said the NFL.
Sorry.
It's NFL. Like, wow. If we want to do NFL.
Nowadays, it's the same thing, Christian.
On me, sorry.
No, you're good. But, I mean, he is arguably the best rushing quarterback in the conference. Looking at 8 rushing touchdowns last season, like you said, in limited snaps. And if he can improve as a passer, which I think is the big kind of a game, and I know it's like for a quarterback, you need to throw the football, but if he can improve in that area, he's going to be he could rise up this list. But I can't have him in that that top echelon. I think he's the best of the rest right now for me because he doesn't have great accuracy. He's not a winner. And that was something that it factored in mind so much about, can you win? If I trust you to win a ball game, can you? He hasn't shown that. I think he's got good raw ability, but he can't win football games right now. Again, that's part of the deal with the team around him, but he was what, 1-1 as a starter effectively. He's a run first guy, so he could miss opportunities downfield when he gets panicked and decides to run the ball instead of, okay, wait, let me step up and fire instead of let me get out of the pocket, go slide 5 yards instead of a 20 yard gain. And if he has to throw the football, if they're going to have good linebackers like Xavier Atkins and Auburn, if they get pass rush and lock up Fluff Bothwell in the run game, can he win throwing the football, being a pass first quarterback? If he improves, maybe, but I just don't know if I could buy really big stock in it. I have him at 8. Where do you have him?
Wow. Okay. So I am not that high on him quite yet. Again, I think the potential is absolutely insane for Kamario Taylor. Again, 6'4", 230 pounds, and again, 458 rushing yards and 8 touchdowns. This is one of the guys that you will have a spy on the entire game. This is not somebody that you try and go rush after and try and bring him down. This is much more of the coverage sacks that you will be very, very happy just to take that. Take the throwaways, and if he does try and evade the pocket, you have a spy right there to at least try and keep him from taking off. The accuracy, which you hit on, is what I need to see. And you see this with the dual threat quarterbacks, right? There's a little bit more of the mobility outside the pocket that doesn't necessarily stay with them inside the pockets. And it's the pros and cons list that you can try and make. But yeah, 55.8% completion percentage is one of those things that you feel like SEC defenses are going to go, okay, beat us inside the pocket. If you can do that, I think you could very easily climb up this list. But again, if you take away his legs, I think it makes him a little bit more more susceptible to some misreads, some errant throws. I have him at number 10. Okay. I have him as my 10th ranked quarterback in the SEC. A fantastic problem to have. This is one of those guys that could very easily jump up that list. Yet, that being said, I fear that the offensive line and the receivers, you do have Anthony Evans in there, but that's where you worry a little bit about what else does he have that could make him climb up that list if you're not just looking at his name.
Right, and I think something that mattered to me a ton was SEC experience. Yeah. And if you look at the guys below him, why I have him a little higher, a lot of those guys don't have SEC experience. There's only one that I think has multiple starts against SEC teams.
So I have Kamario Taylor as my 10th ranked quarterback. You have him as your 8th
yes.
ranked quarterback. We now randomize it again, and we land on, a good one, Arch Manning. Arch Manning, you feel as if we're going to have to scroll up the notes at least a little bit. I have Arch Manning coming in as number 4.
Okay.
For me. I have him as my 4th ranked quarterback in the SEC. Completed 61.5% of his completions, or of his passes, as dropbacks last year. Threw for almost 3,200 yards, 26 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Also ran for 410 touchdowns. Texas asked a lot of him last year. And I think that is why early on you saw some of the failure. You saw all of the Heisman campaigning, and you saw a little bit, again, of that failure. This is a little bit more of a system. It may be a bit contradictory of the overall system type of things, but if you're looking at the overall quarterback rankings in 2026, because of Ray Leek Brown, because of Hollywood Smothers in the backfield, I don't think that you ask as much of Arch Manning, and I think that could lead to a little bit more success. Yet, that being said, I think that that takes away a little bit of the passing game. If you bring a legitimate running back and legitimate running game to Texas, I think that that makes it to where he doesn't have to manufacture all of that offense himself. I think it takes a little bit of pressure off, and simply because he doesn't have to be Superman, I think that that is a little bit of the reason. I understand, again, you run him out on the field. I think that 4 spot is somewhere that I am very comfortable placing him. When you see the hype possibly leave and you just look at what he does on the field.
That's a good place to have him. I had him in consideration for this top 4, which I think my top 4, you could make an argument for any of these guys being 1 or 4. I have him at number 2, and I think I love his mobility. I love his ability to get out of the pocket, be a designated runner. That's going to allow so much this year for Texas. He improved so much last season. I think that, again, what you said, when they asked less of him, and I know that's backwards for saying, like, you're asked less for a quarterback and he did better, like, you're happy that he's doing less. Yeah, because I think at the end of the day, they were asking him to be an NFL quarterback, mm-hmm. and he was not ready to be one, clearly. And I think the pedigree does matter. I know it's like, oh, his uncles are Mannings, an NFL quarterback, his granddad's an NFL quarterback, but if he's in film study and he's seeing, man, this team runs a Tampa 2 defense with a 4-3 front or whatever. Hey, Uncle Eli. Hey, Uncle Peyton. When you played in the NFL and were Hall of Famers, how did you beat this defense? That's something that has to be considered with him. My cons for him, though, it was a tale of 2 arches last season for a reason. He really struggled at the start of the season. When he was the number 1 guy getting caught up, there was some moments where you were really wondering, like, man, was the hype not there? Is he even a top 8 SEC quarterback? And can he be a true winner? And he won games at Texas, won big games at Texas. Look at Red River. You look at Texas A&M. But can he be a guy that can go 11-1? Can he be a guy that can win the games he's supposed to, instead of last year where you lose to Florida and you lose in game 1 to Ohio State? I know those games were early and you really fixed it at the end of the season. But can he be a guy that, You're the front runner. You're not going to have any problems. You're not going to have a close game. Just go out and win the ball game. That's what I want to see from Arch Manning. I have him at number 2.
Number 2 and number 4. I know that I might take a little bit of flack for that, but I'm confident. I'm ready to.
That's fine. Again,
I'm ready to back it up.
I had arguments. I could have argued Arch Manning at 2. I could have had Arch at 1. That, like, there was a couple guys where it was like a circle of, like, I would take him over him. I would take him over him. I would take him over Arch, and I would take Arch over him. Like, I'm not going to say who the other 3 guys are right now. You can probably guess who they are. But that, like, I sat there for 20 minutes, like, man, how do I decide it? And I figured out a way to do it. But Arch number two, and I think four is a fine spot for him.
Yeah. Okay. One more before we take our bottom of the hour break. We work our way to Fayetteville, and KJ Jackson, the Alabama native. I feel as if we have some of these guys in relatively unique spots, kind of just like 1 through 4. I feel like 13 through 16 is kind of relatively the same on there.
I would agree.
Where do you have Mr. Jackson?
I have him at 14.
Okay.
I think he's mobile. He won in high school, won a state championship at the 3A level, a very live arm, and he's played in the SEC before. That's something that the other four guys that are around that area you just said have not done yet. Not a ton of experience, though. Has another quarterback right behind him wanting to take his spot, which could lead to that pressure in year one of, man, look at what John Summerall's doing. Look at what Pete Golding's doing. Look at what Alex Golish is doing. Ryan Silverfield in Arkansas, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And that could lead to maybe like an early change there. But I like KJ Jackson, the Alabama kid, and I have him at 14, and I think it's going to be hard for him to move up because we kind of know what he is compared to some of these other guys. But I do like KJ Jackson. I would be, if he was my starting quarterback, we could build an offense around him.
Sure. I have him one spot lower. I have him at number 15 for me. And I think a little bit of that is Arkansas believes in him. But you just compare that to, again, whether that's some of the potential of the other teams. I don't think there's simply enough true proven production to look at. And he could be one of those guys that turns into kind of like the Lenora Sellers freshman year where you look at it and it's like, holy cow, this guy ended up being a top half quarterback in the
KJ
SEC.
KJ Jefferson at Arkansas.
Sure, yeah. Or Talon Green type of guy.
Yeah.
But when you just look at the team around him, I think that plays a little bit of a factor in there as well. And so he's got the opportunity to climb the list, but I can't necessarily give out the points quite yet for somebody that could climb up.
That's
the
fine
list.
And I think that looking at the guys around him, like in that 13 through 16, I guarantee you we have the same number 16. We probably have similar 13s and at least my 15 and 13, your 14 and 13. But I think 15's a fine spot for KJ Jackson. Again, I considered him for that spot as well.
Again, go show us. I'm sure there will be somebody that we haven't quite seen yet, whether that's a freshman, whether that's a guy that we haven't just seen a lot of in the SEC that could make big-time jumps. But as of right now, I need that to go out and work its way onto the field. We're three picks down. We continue our 2026 SEC quarterback rankings when we come back.
Halfway through hour number two, you're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
A little under 30 minutes to go here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin, and going to continue working our way a little bit quicker, stepping up the pace a little bit here with our 2026 quarterback rankings in the SEC. We've hit Kamario Taylor, Arch Manning, and KJ Jackson so far. I have Kamario Taylor as my 10th. I have Arch Manning as my 4th, and I have KJ Jackson as my 15th. I believe you have Kamario at your 8th. You have Arch at your 2nd, and then KJ Jackson at your 14th. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Boom. We now work our way to a guy who has the utmost potential, yet you saw it freshman year, and I can't say that you saw a whole lot of not even necessarily his fault. I know injuries played a factor in that as well, but the worst offensive line in the entire country last year. We thought Auburn's was bad, and then we went and looked at the South Carolina offensive line and realized that it was, somehow even worse. Lenoris Sellers. This is a guy that I am very, very high on. I was last year and wanted to rank him in my top five last year. Then I went and did some research on the offensive line, and I pumped the brakes just a little bit. But I still feel as if, again, when you are just simply looking at talent, when you're simply looking at him leading command of a team, I still think all the world of the potential is there. Where do you have Mr. Sellers?
I have him at number 7. I think that physical specimen, insane size. He's a great runner. He's got good arm strength, too. People forget that. he could be a number one overall guy in the next draft. I mean, people say that he's a rich man's Anthony Richardson, a poor man's Cam Newton, and I think that's a great accuracy or a person that you could say. His loyalty to South Carolina matters to me. I think that shows that he's a leader. And again, I said baby Cam Newton. He can be with the running, the size, the arm strength. The only concern is the health. And I know that it's because you play in the offensive line that lets more it's like putting a screen door on a submarine. It lets all the everything through.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not really a big winner. What's the signature Lenora Sellers win at South Carolina? Is it Texas
Clemson
A&M?
From his first year?
Clemson from his first year? I mean, still.
That's having to go back and search.
Yeah, and I believe that Clemson team was got into the college football playoff on a field goal, and it should have been SMU spot, and ended up they both got in. I just don't see that, especially in the – what's his signature SEC win? I mean, what, Texas A&M?
Almost Alabama.
Almost Alabama a couple years. Almost LSU. I mean, hypothetical, man. I have Lenora's at my 7. Great physical tools, but can he put it together and win? That's what I need to know. And part of that's South Carolina, part of that's on Lenora Sellers.
Yeah, I have Lenora Sellers as 8. Smack dab in the middle. Again, I think the potential is there, and this could be somebody that has the ceiling of being a top 5 quarterback in the SEC. Completed 61% of his passes last season, 2,400 yards, 13 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. Again, I would comment half of those towards the offensive line. Again, if you're ranking these just purely on raw physical ability, he's a lot higher than 8th. Yet the decision making, the timing, all of that plays a little bit of a factor. 6'3", 240. He's another one of those guys that you don't want him to get out in open space. He will make you pay. I have him right at the top 8. The top half of the SEC is Lenoris Sellers. Kenny Minchie for Kentucky, the next one to follow. I got to scroll down just a little bit and find mine. I have him at 12th. I have him as my 12th ranked quarterback. Completed 77% of his passes. He was only 20 of 26, and so again, a very small sample size. Coming from Notre Dame, I think the potential is there. You've at least seen a little bit of the experience. You've seen a little bit of that action. The problem is it's very little, and so I think number 12 is very respectable in terms of this is a guy that was very talented out of high school, was thought to be possible the future of Notre Dame, yet now you're going to man an offense in Lexington. I have him as my 12th quarterback in the SEC.
Really? I have him at 15. And I like Kenny Minchie. Don't get me wrong. He's played Power Four teams. He's a very, very accurate passer, and I think he could be a sleeper top 10 pick by the end of the season. If he can get in this Will Stein offense and become a downfield threat, again, it's just so much question mark with Kenny Minchie. My problem is he's just not a lot of wow factor, not a guy that walks in a room and Kenny Minchie's here, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, and maybe that's just because that's kind of what Kentucky is right now, but when he was at SEC Media Days, there wasn't a buzz around him like every other quarterback there was in that building. He's not as mobile as you would think for someone his size, a very pocket passer, deep ball threat, and he's very game manager-esque. Like, he's a guy that he's not going to lose you games by doing dumb stuff. He's going to just do what Will Stein tells him to do. But he's not going to win games by making that once-in-a-generational type play. So I'm at 15 just because I'm projecting on a couple guys a little higher.
Okay. I don't mind that. Again,
I think he
different
can
ways
be
of going
top
about
10.
It. Yeah. I don't mind that whatsoever. Another one that you have to scroll to the top of your board for just determines how far you have to scroll up. We head to Oxford. And Trinidad Chambliss for the Ole Miss Rebels.
I didn't want to put him here, but I ended up doing it just because I think that he – because his question marks are big question marks, but I have him at number 1.
Really?
Yes. He wins big games. That matters. Look at the playoff run last season. He almost beat George in the regular season by himself. He is accurate as heck. Just a – guy that's going to get in there and has a high QBR. He doesn't turn the ball over. Only, what, 2 picks last season?
3, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that one of those was, like, in the playoff game. A sneaky mobile quarterback as well. The big question mark for him. How much of that was 2? And these 2 were big enough where I consider having him as low as 4. How much of that was Lane Kiffin and Charlie Wise Jr.'s offense? And how much of that was teams not scouting him versus Austin Simmons, where he was able to catch people by surprise early in the season because we've game planned all year for Austin Simmons. We don't know anything about this kid. I think that helps. having another year of eyes on him is going to help defenses. But I think at pure talent, which is what we argued, because if you're putting on with a hypothetical play caller and a hypothetical average team, both of those things are questioned, answered by that. I think he's got to be number one.
I think he works his way up, definitely, for me. Completed 66% of his passes, 3,900 yards, 22 TDs, 3 interceptions, also ran for 527 yards and 8 touchdowns in there as well. If we're ranking him off of the 2025 production, I don't think that there's any spots of him other than number one. Nearly 4,000 passing yards. Again, that's absolutely absurd. Rather than the scouting aspect of him, the thing that I take a little bit of this is, how much does Kevon Lacy help this offense?
True.
In a Lane Kiffin, the RPO style offense, where the slants are going to be open because of the linebackers trying to bear down on Lacy, what would that look like if you forced the ball to be in Kevon Lacy's hands? I think he could get a little bit more exposed when the defenses are able to make the game entirely about him, which I guess also goes into the Austin Simmons routes. I have Trinidad Chambliss as my third ranked quarterback in the SEC.
I think that's fair. I think Trinidad is good enough to be, I think, going 1-4 is very, very contested. And I think that you said it with, like, how much of it is Lacy. There's a guy on my list that you're going to hear, and effectively that is the reason why, because I believe that it's because of the production around him.
Got a text in the Send Medicine text box, which you can always be a part of at 334-784-1685, and could not agree more. Says if Nick Minicucci was in the SEC, he would be number one.
1-1.
He wouldn't even be able to be on this list.
Yeah,
all-time name list, all-time leaders of of everything. That would be Nick Minicucci of the Delaware Blue Hens.
Yes, we got to do like a Delaware deep dive day for Mr. Minicucci
whatsoever. Keelan Russell, again, we're kind of having to move here. Keelan Russell, University of Alabama. I scroll a little bit, but maybe not as far as I should. I have him as my 11th. Ranked quarterback. I think this is somebody that could easily make that jump up. Limited action, 143 passing yards, 2 passing touchdowns. When you look at the recruiting profile and the college production, I think of him, and you also think of Faison Brandon as well. This is one of the best quarterback prospects. How much of that was the logo? I will choose to stay out of that conversation. The ceiling is definitely massive for him. In terms of Michael Jordan, the ceiling is the roof. But entering this season, again, talking about 143 passing yards, I'm not saying he's the 11th most talented quarterback in the SEC. I'm saying that he is the 11th ranked quarterback that I would trust week one walking onto a football field.
I'm at number 9. I think the ceiling is so high. I said it yesterday. I think they can win a national title with Keelan Russell. I know, again, I said that as an Auburn fan, so that should tell you something. He's very mobile. He can sling the football. He's a great athlete. He's one of the most accurate QBs in the country. In high school, I think he threw like 80% of his pass completions. Granted, in high school, but it's what in Texas high school football. It's not easy, let alone the SEC. I think he's continuing the accuracy. It's the experience. Does he know how to win? Can he go in a big game when you need a drive? You're down early to LSU, and you need a stop and a turnover. Like, you need to play and be a good team. Can he go out there, put a 70-yard drive on tape to take the lead with 2 minutes left? Can he match a big scoring play? We'll go out there and grind it out? We don't know. That's why I have him at 9, because I'm just projecting a lot more for him than I probably did for other guys.
A couple of more before we take our final break here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. John Mateer for Oklahoma. I have him as number 5.
I'm at 4.
Okay, 4th and 5th. 64% completion percentage, 2,800 yards, 14 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. When you look simply at the stat sheet, that doesn't tell you the 5th-ranked quarterback. Yet, I think when you're talking about the broken bone and the throwing hands, I think getting surgery on that is going to play a big factor. You also look at just the dual threats ability, and if he gets the entire offseason to learn this system with an offense that's going to be much improved and taking a defense that's going to be insane. I know that those factors don't necessarily work into John Mateer himself, but I have him as the 5th-ranked quarterback in the SEC.
I'm at 4. Allegedly impressive offseason, a gamer mentality, great arm, mobility. How much of last year's struggles were due to injury? I think there's a lot of it, because you look at the stats, they were not great. Health is a concern, though, and he did shrink in those big games. Playoffs, Red River, you know, you didn't really hear John Mateer making the play to win the game, and he's kind of turnover-prone, even when he was healthy.
A guy that I don't want to spend too much time on, but he was announced today as the starting quarterback over Jared Curtis, Blake Berlewitz for Vanderbilt, 9 of 17 in his career, 131 passing yards and a touchdown. I have him as my number 16.
Yeah, maybe you have a chip on your shoulder. You're a guy that came from New Mexico State with Jerry Keel. You know the offense, but this guy won't be the starting quarterback in like 3 weeks.
I heard that Jared Curtis is also going to take snaps as well.
It is legit just to give Curtis more time to learn the playbook. He will not be the starter by the end of the season.
Marcel Reed, final one before we take a break. I want to start with you, my friend.
I have it at number 5. I wanted to put him higher. I like the SEC experience, one of those experienced quarterbacks in the SEC, a phenom in open space, and he can throw it well, but the downfield passing could use some work. He's very turnover prone. I mean, you look at the Miami game, throwing the game, losing interception, and when will he win his big game? Can't beat Texas. He can beat a bad LSU team and some bad teams here and there, but when is he going to win the game? It's like, that was the Marcel Reed game.
Notre Dame.
Oh, good point. Good point.
This is where I plant my flag right here, baby. I have Marcel Reed as my second-ranked quarterback in the SEC. I was very, very high on him last year. Caught flack for it. I'm going to go even higher this year. 63.5% completion percentage, 3,100 yards, 25 tutties, 12 interceptions. Also ran for 497 yards and 6 touchdowns in there as well. Obvious criticism, as you mentioned it, the 12 interceptions. I'd also like to see that completion percentage continue to climb up. You have Reuben Owens, who's in your backfield with him. That will play a big factor. You also have a fantastic receiving core that's going to play a big factor in there as well. My prediction, and I've said it all along, Marcel Reed's going to be in New York. He might not win it, but I have Marcel Reed making it to New York. Buy stock right now. Marcel Reed, my second-ranked quarterback in the SEC.
I think the turnover is the only thing that turns me off with having Marcel Reed in that top four, but he's the best of the 5 through 7, really, for me.
We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we will quickly work our way through the remaining 5 or 6 names or so and give you the full list of our 2026 quarterback rankings when we come back.
You are on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up the Tuesday edition of On the Line, a little bit of a rapid fire here, if you will, as we wrap up our 2026 quarterback rankings in the SEC. And where do we finish off? With Marcel Reed, we work our way to Austin Simmons, the quarterback, the southpaw from Missouri.
I'm at 11, could have a chip on his shoulder for being pushed out of Ole Miss, played an SEC level, really good appearances in the 2024 and early 2025. However, if he was really that good, he'd still be at Ole Miss, or Lane Kiffin would have got him at LSU, had a really bad Kentucky game, not a ton of mobility. I have him at 11.
I have him at number 9 for me. I think the arm talent is definitely there. The accuracy needs to be there. Through 5 interceptions, only 75 pass attempts. And so how quickly can his game translate into that Eli Drinkwitz offense, especially with Ahmad Hardy not being confirmed ready for the start of the 2026 season. Gunnar Stockton, University of Georgia. Where do you have Mr. Stockton?
Number 3. He's a winner. I wanted to put him at number 1 because I think he's the guy that can win football games. He's a great leader. He's played in and won some big games. Regular season, yes. Playoff needs some work, but the SEC championships has done well. He's got mobility. He shines in an offense that doesn't require him to do too much, but he is turnover prone. He tries to do too much sometimes, and he could really injure himself doing that stuff too much. He loves to put his head down and run through instead of sliding. He loves to fire it into a small window when he probably shouldn't. I have him at number 3, though, because I think he just wins football games.
I have the winning factor as one of the biggest weighing contributors in this. I have Gunnar Stockton as my top quarterback in the SEC.
I wanted to do it so bad, Christian.
70% completion percentage.
So bad.
2,800, almost 2,900 yards, 24 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, also 10 rushing touchdowns. You talk about a physical workhorse that is not afraid to lower the shoulder and make the play needed. You do that also, again, a 70% completion percentage when Georgia led the country in drops last year as well with 36 of them. Give him a good receiving core, and unfortunately, I think Gunnar Stockton is the top quarterback.
He was the one that made my list so confusing because I wanted to put him at number 1.
Aaron Philo, we got a text in the Send Medicine text box from President Eric and asked where you sit with Philo. I know that he knows you're a Georgia Tech guy at heart.
I think he's at 10, man. I think that he looks like an NFL-level guy at his best. Just a prototypical arm talent, just a fantastic arm, one of the best arms I've ever seen, a tough runner, and incredible stats in high school, broke all of Trevor Lawrence and Deshaun Watson's record, and he has got a clutch factor. I've seen it myself. but he only has one career start. He does make bad mistakes. How does he step up to the competition that affects him? I have that as a big question mark, but given the familiarity with the offense, I'm at 10.
Give me 14.
That's fine.
For Aaron Filo. I think he can work his way up, but again, I think that's a very short leash in Gainesville if things do not work its way
also
the way
true.
That they need to go. Byron Brown for Auburn University.
I'm at 6. Good size, good speed, good arm strength, good leadership, good confidence, and he's won some games. Not a ton of SEC experience. Mechanics need sharpening. Oh, goodness. I'm about to sneeze. Mechanics need sharpening. If he can't run it, he can.
I thought that was emphasis.
No. Mechanics need sharpening. If he can't run it, can he? His arm carry an offense?
Yeah, 65% completion percentage, 3,200 yards, 42 total touchdowns, over 4,100 yards of offense. I also have him as my number 6 quarterback in the SEC. Faison Brandon. For the University of Tennessee, quickly.
13, highly ranked recruit. He's won at the highest level. Impressive size. Mobility is there. However, he's got zero college experience. He's going to need the adjustment period and missed most of last season with an injury. I think he can be good, but won't be good early in the season.
Same thing. I have him at 13th. Final one, Sam Levitz for Louisiana State University.
Number 12.
Wow.
CFP experience. Knows how to play with talent around him. He's mobile and he fights for yardage. When he's healthy, he's a top 10 quarterback, but the best ability is availability. Not much of a leader either. He's got big character concerns with what he was doing at Arizona State. He doesn't really wow you. He doesn't do something that's the signature Sam Levitt-like game plan. Questions on the health again, and how much did Cam Scadabo and Jordan Tyson carry him? Can he be? I think he's Peyton Thorne 2.0. Great running back, great wide receiver. Didn't see a ton of that when he lost them. Now is he coming to the SEC? I know it's a Lane Kiffin offense, but I don't know. I think I have him at 12. Maybe that's a mistake. I'll stand on it, though. Give me some fireworks on the way out of here.
I see him at number 7. I have him as my 7th-ranked quarterback. Will he be good in Lane Kiffin's offense? Probably doesn't put me higher, even though many people believe in everything that he has. Quickly, your top 3.
Trinidad, Arch, Gunner, John Mateer, Marcel Reed, Byron Brown, Lenora Sellers, Mario Taylor, Keelan Russell, Philo. The rest doesn't matter.
That's a long top 3.
Top 10, sorry.
I have Gunnar Stockton, Marcel Reed, and I have Trinidad Chambliss rounding out my list. He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. Sports are so much better with an opinion. Whether you love them, whether you hate them, we're back tomorrow to talk all about them, and we hope you'll be there to join us.